Good afternoon, everyone. We'll call the Committee on Agriculture Rural Economies to order. Today is Tuesday, March 13. We have a busy schedule. Sorry for the late start. The previous committee jobs had a raucous meeting, so not like agriculture where we're very gentlemanly and everything else here and ladylike. First up, we have Senate File 2258. To the Department of Ag come up. Since I'm the off of the bill, we have a delete all amendment, the A1 amendment. I will tell the committee that Senator Scoy and I spent the majority of last Friday morning together with the department and others working on this bill, the food safety, what we're calling the food safety and feed bill. And I appreciate Senator Scoy on behalf of the minority working together with us in the department. I know the department has spent years working on this. And so I know plenty of people are here in the audience to testify on the bill also and everything. So first off, I will move the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? It's in your packets. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. We'll have the Department of Ag walk us through the bill. So good afternoon, Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you for the delete all amendment and hearing our bill today. Just very briefly to summarize kind of what's going on with this food safety bill. And just for the record, it at one point we were talking about food and feed, but this bill just focuses on food. It's taking the enforcement language from seven different chapters in the statutes and recodifying it in one chapter to make it easier for the public and persons who operate or want to operate a food operation, food packaging or processing operation, make it easier for them to find out what the rules or the enforcement stipulations are. And, Mr. Chairman, we think it'll also streamline our ability to enforce the law, too. With that, I will turn it over to Doug Spanier, who is our chief attorney, and he will do a section-by-section walkthrough
Welcome, Mr. Spanier, to the committee. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Doug Spanier. Like Greta said, I'm attorney at the Department of Agriculture. There's really about three things this bill does. It consolidates the enforcement chapters from, like I said, five or six, seven different chapters. Again, we had food, dairy. There's a bunch of different chapters, and they all grew. They all had their own enforcement sections in the law. They all had definitions in the law, and so when we came to enforcement, you're looking at four or five different chapters, trying to figure out how we're doing it. So what this does is it consolidates all the enforcement into one chapter. It consolidates multiple definitions into one chapter. It doesn't change the definitions, but it moves the definitions into one section. So we're not looking at one definition of adulteration in the meat section, a definition of alteration in the food section, a definition of adulteration in the dairy section, where it's in one spot. So we can go there. It doesn't change the definition, but it's in one spot. It also moves some things from 18D, which is our pesticide and fertilizer area. Some of the things that has worked in that enforcement and in enforcement-wise, we've moved some of that stuff over into the food area as well. I guess those are the two main things it does. If we go through the bill, the first thing, the change is in Section 2, the contested case. This came as a recommendation from the Attorney General's office. In our other divisions, and I think other agencies have, when an ALJ makes a decision on a case, it gets sent back to the commissioner, and normally the commissioner can adopt or adopt the changes or make their own recommendation. The law in the dairy and food area was that the administrative law was a final opinion, so it never did get to come back to the commissioner. And that's what the Attorney General's office used to want to have in there until they got a ruling from the AG's office or from the ALJ that essentially said after the agency got a bad opinion from the ALJ, or essentially it ruled against the department, it said that the department couldn't appeal it because it was essentially a final decision by the commissioner coming from the ALJ. So what the Attorney General's office recommend is to take this back out and put it back to what most of the other agencies have and what other parts of our agency has, and that the opinion coming from an ALJ comes back to the commissioner to make recommendations itself. Then the rest, I should say, the next sections from section 3 all the way over to
page
13. Section 27. These are all just the conforming sections to refer everything back to 34A. So then section 27, page 13, line 27, this is where the enforcement section will be. Again, what this does is it first sets out the definitions. So they don't change any of the definitions in the law. We just put them all in one spot now. And that's what happens here with section 27 all the way through to page 19. And no real changes there. All we did was move all the definitions to one section. One chapter, I should say. So then on page 19... This is where, on section 31, page 19, this is where the enforcement section starts. Here, this hasn't, these changes here on section 31 hasn't changed. It's the same enforcement that we've always had. Nothing changes there. Next page, page 20, section 32, the false statement or record. This is something that came from 18D. It's our pesticide and fertilizer area. Essentially, if someone makes, you know, a false statement in their registering or licensing with us, it can be considered a violation of statute. Section 33, this is our administrative actions. This is nothing's changed here except for line 24 through line 30. This is very specific. This came from our pesticide and fertilizer area. This just deals with plan reviews. When I think it's a retail food establishment needs to get a license, they have to turn in and submit a plan review. And what will happen here is sometimes what happens is they submit a plan review, we approve it, and then when our inspector goes out in the field to look at the building being constructed, it's not the same as the plan review that we've approved. You know, so things change in the field and that they haven't got back to us. So this would make it so that we can take away that certification if these certain things have happened, if there's a hazard to human life, or that the issue that our approval of it was issued in a fraudulent manner. So again, it's only on plan reviews that would apply to. Page 21, lines, 3 through 12. These are, again, also came over from 18D, our pesticide and fertilizer area. And this gives the authority for the commissioner, this would be new language, allowing the commissioner to revoke or suspend a license in certain cases. This would be dealing with the traveling people where they go, they're in Iowa, they're there till they get their license revoked, then they go to Wisconsin, they go there till they get their license revoked, all that. Then they come to Minnesota, they want a license. It would allow us to be able to say, you know what, you've had these violations in other states, you can't get a license here in Minnesota. Same type of thing there, and if they've used fraudulent or deceptive practices in getting their license, that's there. The next part, section 34, is our administrative penalty section. That hasn't changed. Next page, administrative action, section 35, that hasn't changed at all. Then we get to section 36 on page 22, civil penalties. Generally, with government, on enforcement, there are three types of enforcement we could take. One is criminal action. One is administrative action, and one is civil action. Criminal action, if there's a violation, that's the easy one. We just send it over to, we provide the evidence, and we send it over to a county attorney or city attorney, and they can take the case and prosecute them, and we're simply witnesses in the case. Administrative action, that's when, or administrative penalties, that's when we would issue a penalty, but it would go to an ALJ. And when it goes to an administrative law judge, the department has to pay for the ALJ and pay for the attorney general's time to hear the case. So with an ALJ, that can sometimes cost us between $4,000 to $10,000 in a hearing on a case. Now, you can imagine if we've issued, and of course, in due process, everybody has, in any agency action, they have due process. So if we find somebody or we go administrative penalties for $3,000 and they appeal that, we have to pay for that ALJ to hear that case. So in some cases, we'd be paying $4,000 to $10,000 to get $3,000, which really doesn't make a lot of sense. So what we'd like to be able to do and what we have in other parts of our agency is to have civil penalty authority. Civil penalty authority, what we do, same type of concept, but instead of going to an ALJ, we would go to a district court judge. So if we fine them $3,000, we'd go to a district court judge. We don't have to pay for the judge. We just have to pay for the attorney general's time. And in fact, if it's less than $5,000, we don't even need to use the, if it's small claims court, we wouldn't even need to use the attorney general's office. We could do it ourselves. And the other part about civil penalties, our regulated clientele and other eight parts of our agency like this, because when we go after somebody in administrative penalty phase, we have an opinion from the attorney general's office that says we have to issue a final order, which means we have to put in a document that says you have violated the law. Now, and so that's what has to get appealed. Now, if we go to a district court and civil penalties, all that we have in the document is saying we allege that you've done these things, and it'll go to the district court. So our regulated clientele would much rather have the civil penalty route rather than having a document out there that says you violated the law that has to come before we can appeal anything. So this Section 36 deals with civil penalty authority. It comes over from what we have in pesticide and fertilizer area and in some other areas of our agency. And then the Section 37 is our criminal penalty section. Again, we already that's existing language, except for lines on page 23, lines 20 through 23. That's come over from our 18D. And this would make it a gross misdemeanor if there's a violation that endangers humans or animals. That comes over from, again, from our 18D of pesticide and fertilizer area. And then the rest of the remaining amendment is existing language that's just being moved from one of our other chapters into this area.
So, Mr. Chairman, just again, the bulk of this bill is recodification, not new. What's new is section 36, the civil penalties. And we think having civil penalties in addition to criminal and administrative would give us a full complement of tools to use so that we can be as efficient as possible moving forward, addressing concerns that are out there, getting things fixed, and then moving on. And with that, I believe we'd be ready to answer questions. We have staff people here who are experts in various areas of food safety law, and they're ready to answer questions, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. I will point out to the members in your packet, there is a fiscal note that shows no impact. Also, there's an appendix that shows the repealed statutes. Again, much of this is moving things around and in putting them into a consolidating really the rules into a more clear section of the law. So any questions? Anyone from the audience care to testify? Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on the civil penalty, is that a new penalty or is that a penalty that was brought over from some other area?
Mr. Spanier or Ms. Gothier?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I believe it came over from 18D, and I believe the amount that we have in there is also from 18D. It's the same stuff we brought over from our pesticide and fertilizer area, and just the same language we just put over so it'll apply to the food.
Senator Stump? I would suggest, Senator Stump, it's a new penalty for this area.
Yes.
So does this does that mean that this goes to judiciary?
Yes, it does. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else care to testify on the bill? If not, seeing no one, Senator Rosen.
Senator Magnus, can I move the bill as amended?
What we're going to do is lay it on the table. Members, the intent would be we'll lay this on the table, then we'll take up the agriculture policy bill, and we'll then bring this from the table and put it onto the policy bill. So this will all move as one. It won't move separately because the ag policy bill also has to go to judiciary from here, and so we'll just put it all together and do that. So seeing no one out there to testify, we'll go ahead and put this Senate file 2259, the A1, as amended.
Mr. Chair.
Or 58, excuse me. And Senator Scoy.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, as we put this on the table, I just want to, for my own clarification and to put onto the tape, that there really is only about four major areas of change here. One is that the administrative law judge, you know, is not the final say if they have had problems. The second one is if there's a plan review, and when they go out to inspect, that if the plan was not met, they can suspend the permit. The third one is if they can revoke the license if licenses are issued in other states, were revoked in other states. And then the civil action that Senator Stump talked about. Other than that, it's pretty much just moving things around. So it kind of give the members some comfort that there isn't a lot going on here.
Thank you, Senator Scoy. And thanks again for working with all of us here on Friday, working to get this put together in the best way we could before the committee. So no further discussion. We'll go ahead and lay 2258 as amended on the table. And then we'll take up Senate file 2061. Again, that should be in your packets, members. The ag policy bill that we heard last week. So, Senator Rosen, would you care to move Senate File 2258 as amended as an amendment to 2061?
Senator, Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 2058 as amended.
And it would be a new article in the ag policy bill.
Into Senate File 2061.
As a That's new right. article. So we'll move these as articles. Everyone understand that? Doing this, so it would be a new article in the Senate ag policy bill. Very good. Thank you, Senator Rosen. All those in favor of said motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes. Let's see. I think we'll continue down other amendments we've got. I believe, and take general discussion on the bill. We have another amendment. I think Senator Brown has one. We'll just dip. Do you have a question, Senator Rosen?
No, I have an amendment.
Okay. Well, maybe you do. We'll do your amendment first. Senator Brown's is coming out. Do you have one that's passed out, Senator? Or okay. We'll go back to Senator Brown. You may recall, members, that Senator Brown had a bill before us that Well, Senator Brown, why don't you explain it?
Right.
It was your bill. It was the one on wind easements where we continued on the effort to have a 7-year maximum for wind easements in the wind industry out there. So, Senator Brown, would you care to describe your bill and the path that it's taking?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In essence, we're extending the effective date on my bill to June 1st, 2017. And I don't know how much detail you need me to go in on this. It's on the wind easements. It's already passed through other committees.
Senator Rosen's committee has gone through and the others, and it's on the way. But I think Senator Brown's bringing this as an amendment just as a safeguard in case the House takes no action. We'll have it in here. We have no opposition. No one's testified in opposition to the bill. We have that going forward. Mr. Knopf, I think, could explain additional comments to it.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you'll remember when we heard the bill, Senator Brown's bill in committee, the issue is if the farmer signs a wind easement with a wind developer, that the what the current law says is that there's 7 years for commercial development of wind on the farm, or the easement becomes void and then the farmer can chop around with somebody else. And this delays that deletion of that language for another 5 years.
Okay, any discussion on the A3 amendment Senator Brown has offered? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. The A3 amendment's added to the policy bill 2061. Senator Rosen, yes, are you prepared with your amendment?
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A2 amendment, and it's just being passed out right now. And
okay.
Mr. Bruce Claven is here to testify on it. But basically what this is page 14, line 31. It says that commercial feed does not include feed produced and used by a distributor. So what this implies is that you have some people that are growing their own feed for commercial use and for their own use, and right now they're being taxed for both. So what this would say is that it's not really fair if you're using just for yourself to be taxed on that, just for the commercial use part of it. And as I said, Mr. Claven's here.
Welcome, Mr. Claven.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bruce Claven, I represent the Minnesota Turkey Growers Association on this issue. This came to us members during our poultry day a couple of weeks ago. Some members brought this issue to our attention. We hope this is a fairly simple amendment, and I can preface it by saying we're working with the department to make this a workable piece. It's maybe not there yet, but in terms of a conference committee, we commit to getting this right with them. Senator Rosen mentioned we have farmers who have their own mills and their own poultry barns. And it's been a longstanding policy of the department to have a farmer who brings his own corn in and ground up his feed to not pay an inspection fee. And then on this side, you have a fully commercial mill that generates feed and sells it exclusively, and they pay an inspection fee. The purpose of the inspection fee is to protect the public from misbranding and adulterated and mislabeled feed. Then you have this group in the middle that owns their own mill. They sell some, and they use some for their own use. And this amendment attempts to carve that out and say that if you're selling to the public, you pay the inspection fee, and if you're using it for your own use, you don't. The reason it's written the way it is back in the definitional section earlier in the statute, the distributor is someone who distributes feed into the supply. And so technically, a mill that's distributing it to its own barns is, in fact, distributing feed under the definition. So we use the word distributor here in the amendment. If you look at the amendment as I've described it, the public policy is still being served in that the public is being protected, and yet the growers who use their own feed are not being paid tax on the inspection fee. And again, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude by saying we are working with the department. We are not by any means, at least in my view, at loggerheads over this. We're just trying to get it worked out.
Okay, any questions? Senator Rosen.
And Mr. Chair, I must, for the record, just apologize. I said the taxes, but it is the inspection
fees.
Fee. Exactly.
Fees.
And and when Bruce Claven says he'll get it worked out, he gets it worked out.
Okay. Vote of confidence for you, Mr.
Oh.
Claven.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But that was only one vote. Every committee voted on this. Does anyone care to, any questions, Mr. Claven? Anyone care to testify on the amendment? If not, Senator Rosen, is there a motion for we accept the A2 amendment for inclusion in the policy bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries, and that's included. Senator Dames has the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A1 amendment, and I would request the department come up to the hearing table and go through the amendment with us.
Thank you, Ms. Senator Dames. Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a copy of the amendment.
Oh, sorry. Did I get her a copy of the amendment?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
That's all right.
My mistake. Okay, Mr. Chairman, these are some amendments that were brought to us from a couple of different groups. The first one here from lines on page 3, on lines of the amendment from line 1.2 to 1.6. This deals with the Department of Agriculture's statutory responsibility in the Groundwater Protection Act of 1989 to collect ag and non-ag waste pesticides. And we work with, we work to negotiate with counties to see if they can collect our ag and non-ag waste pesticides along with household hazardous waste collection that counties are already doing. If we don't negotiate with the county to do it, then we have to make arrangements for collection on our own. So we think it's more... It makes more sense to negotiate and make it part of one collection system. One of the issues we've run into is that many counties are, or not many, but several counties have joined into, gone into joint powers agreement for collection of household hazardous waste. So the changes in Senate File 2161 as introduced would allow us to negotiate with a number of counties who have a joint powers agreement for household hazardous waste collection. If you look at Senate File 2061 as introduced, we're on page 3, lines 28 and 29 there, is the new language. And what would also, the language that's on the amendment was brought to us by the Association of Minnesota Counties, and it's some language they would like to clarify on line 28 there after 4. It would allow us to enter into a contract with a group of counties under a joint powers agreement. So they would prefer us to say enter into contract, and we're fine with that. So that's that first line there. Excuse me, that's just the page 3. And then we go to page 17 through 20. And this is pertaining to the Dairy Research, Teaching, and Consumer Education Authority that's in our bill. And again, just to refresh memory, that is an initiative of Minnesota Milk, and we support having it in our bill, moving it forward. The lines 1 through 3.16 of the amendment deal with this, or excuse me, 1.3 and 1.4. And what this would simply do is add to the description of the various members of the board of this authority one processor. So this would allow one dairy processor to also serve on the board.
Thank you.
Next amendment is on page 20. On line 6, and this pertains to the new dairy authority's annual report, would also require them to submit it to the chairs and ranking minority members of the committees with Ag Committee. Then on page 20, also after line 23, I am sorry, Mr. Chairman, on that 1.8, maybe Mr. Knopf can refresh our memory on that one. I'm not sure.
We're adding a sunset here. Go ahead, Mr. Knopf.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we're adding a sunset for this new entity that's being created. That was a part of the discussion at the committee hearing last time, and the question is how do you do this? And we thought if this thing gets formed, they'll just have to come back to the legislature to get that sunset lifted if it gets formed within 5 years.
I think that was Senator Kelash asking about that, and we thought, you know, if this happens in 5 years, it happens. If it doesn't, then the sunset.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the next two items here on page 29 deal with scale tickets, and those are the tickets that farmers get from elevators when they bring in grain. What this would simply do is we're moving from rule into statute the requirement that those scale tickets contain, in addition to the name and location of each transaction, the weight, the volume, the kind of grain, and the signature of the warehouse operator. And it was brought to our attention that a lot of these tickets are done electronically now. So we would simply be adding on the amendment there that electronic grain tickets do not require a signature because they are considered a legal document. And then on line 33, we'd be adding that all paper scale tickets still have to be dated and signed by the warehouse operator or their agent or the manager. So, but we're moving something from rule into statute, but we're saying it's okay to do an electronic, but if you aren't doing electronic, then you still need to, paper still needs to have that signature on it, Mr. Chairman. And that was brought to us by the industry.
Yep.
Then, Mr. Chairman, the next amendment simply adds some statutes, mainly from the Board of Animal Health, that are obsolete and need to be repealed. And they inadvertently did not get in the bill at the time of drafting.
All right. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor, Senator James has moved the A1 amendment to be included into the Ag Policy Bill 2061. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Now, I think Senator Sachs-Hogg is doing the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would offer the A6 amendment and ask Mr. Knopf to help me explain this, and I'll have offer a oral amendment when we get down to line 1.5.
I think, Mr. Chair, Senator Sachs, what I'll do is I'll read what the oral amendment to it is, and then you can just incorporate that in your amendment so you don't need to take a vote on that oral piece.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf.
Why don't I do that right now before we start here?
Right.
On line 1.12, before the word vessels, insert Vessels of the United States Coast Guard and, I think that'd be the cleanest way to do this. So it would read, when we're finished, it will read Vessels of the United States Coast Guard and vessels subject to inspection under United States Code Title 46, Section 3301, and so on. Those would be now exempt, at least temporarily exempt, from the biodiesel requirement. And what Mr. Chair and Senator Sachs, the remainder of your amendment is similar to what Senator Magnus offered for his biodiesel bill in a previous hearing.
Right.
Basically, the two-year extension and including the cold weather rule in here, and then also having the task force. And one thing that you do by putting the vessels of the United States Coast Guard in there, the report that's going to be done and the studies that are going to be done will then include that in there because it's basically on all of the exceptions. So when that becomes an exception, it also becomes one of the elements that will be studied and reported on.
Okay. Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I would move the A6 amendment as amended.
Okay. Senator Saxog places before us the A6 amendment. Senator Scoy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I support all of this amendment except lines 11 through 13. And, I mean, we're going to do this study. We're going to try to figure out what the rationale for exemptions are, and now we're adding another exemption. But I guess I win some and I lose some, and I probably have lost this one. But just think that this is death by a thousand pinpricks, folks. And so we're going to add another exemption for the Coast Guard.
Anyone wishes to testify on the A6 amendment? Seeing no one testifying, Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, I maybe should have been paying more attention, but what is the stricken language on 1.11?
Mr. Knopf? Senator Stump, that is an exemption that went away on May 1st of 2010. So that that exemption for aircraft landing field vehicles does not exist today, and it hasn't been around since May 1st of 2010. And so that's just being stricken to kind of clean it up since it's an old one. It's not effective anymore.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Heading in the right direction.
Senator Sparks?
Just to be clear, other than Senator Saxog's oral amendment on the top, the dates that are in this amendment were similar to what you had last week. We didn't make any changes to that.
No changes to the date, Senator. Okay. Any further questions? If not, Senator Saxog has moved the A6 amendment to be included into the Ag Policy Bill, Senate File 2061. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion carries. Senator, we have the A4 amendment. I believe it's Senator Scoy's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd offer the A4 amendment.
That's just a moment, Senator Scoy. We'll get this passed around.
While we're waiting, Mr. Chair, maybe I could comment that Senator Saxog, you've got a couple of these amendment exemptions on here, don't you, that I've prevailed on?
It's a heck of a track record, Mr. Chair.
We're doing the best we can. Okay, Senator Scott, I think everyone has it. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. You know, we have an issue in Minnesota with regard to ethanol and butanol and the extension of the ethanol goal that we have 20% ethanol in our fuel, which we haven't achieved yet, but we're still working toward that. This amendment extends that 20% goal out 1 year to the date December 31st of 2013. And what we're hoping is that we can continue to work toward getting 20% of the fuel that's used in Minnesota to have ethanol or a renewable energy in it. As you know, there's a plant in southern Minnesota that's now making biobutanol, and they were in the Star Tribune the other day. And I do going to have a question of the industry at some point as to whether that article was correct, that it legally cannot be sold in Minnesota. But what I'm trying to do here is to ask the Next Gen Energy Board to, in its report to the legislature that it's going to give in February of next year, kind of give us a little information on next generation of biofuels that can be blended with gasoline. We need to analyze what kind of research is on these biofuel blends, what federal approvals are needed, and what's the status of these federal approvals. And hopefully next legislative session we will be making some decisions with what we're going to do with biobutanol and if we're going to include it in with the ethanol content requirement or not, and give us a little information. We would hope that this activity is held early through this interim this year, and that you know, we could have some progress on this and maybe even possibly have some updates as we go through the summer. But that's not in the bill, but it would be a request if it's at all possible. And I worked with the chair on this. I think it's an effort to move Minnesota forward with regard to renewable energies. And so happy to answer questions or listen to testimony.
And Mr. Senator Scoy, we have one technical amendment we need to make, if you would. Mr. Knopf has we have one date here we didn't catch earlier. We need to change that date in your amendment. So, Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, if you could incorporate on line 1.5, striking 2013 and insert 2014, then the dates work better. We're moving everything a year forward, and that was inadvertently left off this amendment.
I'll incorporate that on page 1, line 5, 2014 instead of 2013.
Thank you, Senator Scoy. Any questions? Anyone in the audience wish to testify? Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Senator, Mr. Chair, and committee members. My name is Tim Rudnicki. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Biofuels Association. And I want to thank you for your interest in biofuels in Minnesota. I guess with respect to the proposed amendment, I respectfully request that you consider the pragmatics of what we're dealing with. First of all of you or any of you who have had a hand in the ethanol statutes that are in the state of Minnesota, thank you. And you have done something tremendous for all of us in Minnesota because you truly have moved us to the use of renewable fuels. And we've made some incredible progress. The challenge we face is that it's not just what we believe as leadership should be on biofuels in Minnesota, but this is also about working with the Environmental Protection Agency. We've made incremental progress as we move from E10 to higher blends of ethanol, but for all practical purposes, to actually achieve the E20 goal, at minimum, we would need a three-year extension. So line 1.15 should read 2016, and 1.17 should read 2012 at minimum. Our original request for assistance on this was to have a five-year window. With respect to the next-gen board, I don't have an opinion yet at this time about its contribution, but I can tell you the Minnesota Biofuels Association has reached out to other biofuel producers with the idea of keeping the analysis of all the issues you suggested, Senator Scoy, in a structured form. We haven't worked out the details yet, but we would envision the use of a facilitator and subject matter experts to do a thorough analysis and then come back to legislators to discuss this advance to other biofuels. And I think one caution I'd leave with you, there are other biofuels that we could add to our mix of renewable fuels in Minnesota. I think it's much more complicated than simply striking a word. I think it's much more complicated than simply convening a discussion about blended fuels. You have created, and your predecessors have helped create, an industry that is pumping about $12 billion into the Minnesota economy. $12 billion. And we, through the ethanol and corn combination, are touching and supporting about 70,000 jobs. So I urge you to proceed with caution as we start tinkering with the statute, and respectfully request that we have a minimum of 3 years extension and that we have an opportunity to convene the stakeholder group.
Okay, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. And we really aren't tinkering with the statutes. I mean, we are adding 1 year, and we'd like to see some action in that 1 year that we're adding. Nothing in the language of this amendment prohibits you from working with a facilitator to try to come up with solutions for biofuels in Minnesota. I mean, we recognize that those of us that have been around here a while, this has been a good deal for Minnesota. It's a good deal for the corn growers. And really, it's a good deal for all of agriculture because as one of agriculture's commodities, prices increase, it tends to drag everybody's along with it. So we recognize that, and we don't take that lightly. It's important. But we also recognize that the world moves on and different fuels come along, and biobutanol isn't going to be the only different biofuel, as you just said, that comes along. And we want people looking at it. We want people studying it. If this group can add to the discussion, great. If you guys can get together with a facilitator and all the different biofuels that you see forthcoming or potentially forthcoming and come back next session to the legislature with better ideas, we'll all listen to that. And I know you'd like a little more time, but time is kind of drifts away. You know, you give 3 years and we'll wait till 9 months before the deadline and start working. So let's just do it now, and then 9 months from now, maybe we'll have some kind of answers and results that we can take a look at. But, you know, we're not tinkering with the statute other than we're adding a year to it, and we're going to have a little study going on. But you guys can facilitate and study all you want.
Yeah. And Senator Scoy, I would just add to your comments, you and I and Senator Rosen all serve on the Next Gen Energy Board. And I authored that language in the House, and we put it together because we wanted to do two things. We wanted to make sure we could support and keep strong our current biofuel industries, and then we wanted to look at the next generation of fuels and figure out how we could support any new initiatives on the next generation of biofuels. And that's the two things we set that board up to do. And I agree with you completely, Senator Scoy, that we put deadlines out there down the road. Here we'll be sitting here on August 29th of whatever date we put in there and decide we'll have a meeting. As Senator Scoy, you and I have talked about this, and Senator Rosen, the Next Gen Board will help these groups get together and have some meetings. And we'll see what happens then a year from now under your amendment, Senator. Senator Rosen, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, you did very well. Okay. Just go like this.
Yep. All right.
That's good.
Well, that's what we're trying to do. I relate this as a superhighway out there of where we want to be. And we have all these dirt paths ahead of us, whether it's this technology or that fuel or whatever, and we want to make sure that we don't do the best job we can to get to the superhighway that we all want to get to. When someone mentioned in the finance committee this morning, they'd meant by a gas station, gasoline was $3.75, and who knows what's going to happen here. So I think we need to do what we can. Mr.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, again, with all due respect to what you're trying to do, I urge you once again to just look at the totality of the situation here. You have helped create an industry that is currently displacing petroleum. You have helped create an industry that, thanks to its success, has suppressed the price of gasoline by about 89 cents. And I have the study to support that number, and I'm more than happy to provide it to all of you. You have created a structure of statutes and an infrastructure that can serve as the launch pad for all other biofuels. And I think a lot of the futurists would tell us in 2050 and 2030, to your point, Senator, that there are a lot of other possible biofuels. The key is to keep the core strong. The key is to keep the launch pad intact. And the minimum of 3 years would allow the industry to work with the federal agencies, the state agencies. It would send a positive signal to those producers right here, right now, that are supporting the industry. And for those who are contemplating expansion and new construction, I believe the three-year signal would be very positive and perhaps help to retain that activity within the state rather than allowing it to go across the borders.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your testimony is that you have impacted the price of gasoline 89 cents already. That means you are standing strong in a market, and you have support for that 89-cent number. So if you're already standing strong in a market, having an impact, then you probably don't need protection. But this amendment gives you one more year to stand on your own and be ready for what's coming next. And if the price of gas continues to move as it is, you will have an even stronger place to play in the market.
Mr. Chair, may I respond?
Yes, Mr. Reddy. Yes.
Senator Benson, I think the to call this protection might be a stretch. What I'm concerned about here is it sounds like we're starting to pit a biofuel against a biofuel, and that's the last thing we ought to be doing in the state of Minnesota, not just for the industry, but for all of us. We have challenges with other petroleum products, and here's an opportunity again to make sure we circulate the dollars back into the state of Minnesota, to keep the dollars in the state of Minnesota. So what we're trying to do is this is more about creating a level playing field with traditional petroleum products. I don't see this as pitting, it shouldn't be as pitting a biofuel against a biofuel. So the protection, if you want to think of it that way or simply as a goal here, is about creating an environment in which biofuels can thrive within the state and displace more petroleum.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one thing you need to know. We have had people in our offices that want to put biobutanol in this statute this year. So this is a compromise.
Mr. Vanasek. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you. My name is Rob Vanasek on behalf of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. I'm not going to reiterate everything Mr. Rinicky expressed, but we did sit down with some of the folks who want to extend this for only 1 year last week. Of course, many of us would like to see it extended for 5 years. We did discuss, as Mr. Rinicky shared, a three-year compromise, if you will. But we're looking to work together with these folks and expand the pie, if you will, rather than pit biofuel against biofuel. So just for the record, the Minnesota Corn Growers Association does support a three-year extension rather than a one.
Thank you, Mr. Vanasek. Any further questions? Senator Scoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vanasek, just for my own edification, do you know, so we're going to use corn to make, a lot of these different biofuels. Do you know what the difference volume corn for, BTU or gallon in one versus the other? Is a significant amount? But corn is going to be used for, many of these products. Can you get a little information on that?
Mr. Vanasek?
In relation to the biobutanol, what's been shared with us from the proponents is that the biobutanol does have a higher energy content, but an equal amount of increased cost for that content. So something like 30% more energy at a cost of at an additional 30% cost.
And then about the...
I'm not that familiar with the details. You may... I know they're here. You may have...
I can find out another time.
Further questions? Anyone else care to testify? If not, yes, we do have. Thank you, sir. We do have some folks from the biobutanol industry to join us today. Good afternoon, Mr. Karlsrud.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Magnus. And for the record, my name is David Karlsrud. I'm a Rock County corn farmer, and I was co-op coordinator that took the lead for selling our plant to Gevo over pretty near 2 years ago now. And part of the reason we did that as farmers is we couldn't take the plant any further. We always had an expression, you're either greener and growing or you're ripe and rotting, and we wanted to be on the cutting edge of something new. I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee members for being able to testify. I'm thankful that we can testify in favor of this bill. I think this is a common-sense approach to inclusion of all biofuels in Minnesota by taking this approach, using the Next Generation Board and all the stakeholders in the state here to find a way to be more inclusive as we move forward with this new technology. One of the things that I find it exciting, and this is why I wish the committee was in Laverne, Minnesota today, is from the fact that you can see 230 construction workers out there in the field working 24 hours a day, 6 days a week. You can see the acres of steel and the parts yet to be assembled by May 23rd when they plan to start production of isobutanol. You can see the excitement of the employees as they go through training. They're going through hours and hours of training as they learn to manufacture this new product. Mm-hmm. You can see the amazement of the farmers as they drive to the plant that they formerly owned and proud to deliver corn to this futuristic facility, the first one of its kind in the world. You can see the no vacancy signs in our motels and in the surrounding areas as they're filled up with construction workers. You can see the letters and emails that are coming from students that are wanting internships or wanting to learn more about isobutanol. Gevo hosted a busload of students last year from the University of Minnesota Bioproducts and Bioengineering Systems to learn more about isobutanol. They again are touring the facility again and under construction this April. They're excited about the future. You could be sharing some of the excitement of being this first bioprocessing plant in the world that was shared recently with our groundbreaking event last summer. We had many dignitaries there. Many of them were there just for a few minutes, but they ended up staying hours because of what's the changes that are happening right here in Minnesota. So as the ethanol industry changes and it has some challenges, plants need to adapt. Innovation and technology changes fast, and Minnesota needs to change with it. We cannot afford to let this opportunity get by. We need to address this change now, and I'm thankful that this amendment does that in a common-sense manner. So with that, I thank you for being able to testify, and I have with me here, I'll let him introduce himself, from Gevo office in Denver.
Thank you, Mr. Karlsrud. Good afternoon, young man.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing today?
Doing well.
Good. Please state your name for the record.
Yeah, for the record, my name is Paul Dwyer, Manager of Business Development for Gevo. Thank you for your time today, and Gevo is in favor of the one-year amendment, so thank you for that as well. A little background on Gevo: we're a Colorado-based renewable fuels and chemicals company focused on making isobutanol. Isobutanol can be made directly as a solvent and as a gasoline blend stock, or easily converted into jet fuel, plastic bottles, and chemicals using standard petrochemical and refining processes. And we're using cornstarch as they are today in the ethanol plants. Isobutanol has more BTUs per gallon than ethanol, and it keeps it from diluting into water. As a result, it performs very well in every kind of engine, whether it's your lawnmower, snowmobile, or motorboat. It can be used in all your cars and all engines, flex fuel, vehicle, or otherwise. This is what we call it, drop-in fuel. As Mr. Kohlzer mentioned, we're currently on the site in Laverne with 230 construction workers. We're dedicated to having that plant up and running by June. We've received EPA approval for 12.5% blending into the gasoline blend stock, and we're dedicated to working over this next year to get this into the fuels market. So to wrap up, just want to say Gevo believes new biofuel molecules are now ready to enter the market. We believe government policy should point the way to the future but not tell you exactly what road to take, and we're dedicated to working on that with the other biofuels that are available today. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have about isobutanol.
Thank you, Mr. Dwyer. Mr. Cole. One question I have is, can you sell isobutanol now in the state of Minnesota blended with gasoline? Or?
Mr. Chairman, no, sir. With the ethanol 10 mandate, you have to have 10% ethanol in the gasoline. If it goes below the 10%, which would happen if we added isobutanol, you would no longer meet that 10% requirement. It would be illegal to sell.
All right. Okay. And members, you have some additional materials in your folders talking about biofuels. So we thank you very much, Mr. Dwyer and Mr. Karlsrud. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman. Any further questions on the A4 amendment? Anyone else care to testify? Seeing no one, all those in favor of Senator Scoy's A4 amendment to the Senate policy, ag policy bill, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Members, now we will need to move this bill to go. We'll move, Senator Dames will make the motion to move Senate File 2061 as amended.
So
to
move,
the Judiciary Committee.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 2061 as amended to be moved to the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone, for working on the bill. These omnibus bills get to be ominous at times. So. Thank you very much for everyone's work on this, especially your help, Senator Scoy, and working overtime on this. We really appreciate working with the minority. Senator Koch, let's talk about horses here. Members, we have Senator Koch has Senate File 396 before the committee. Senator Nelson, would you move Senate File 396 to before the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So moved.
All right. Thank you, Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, we also have an amendment. We have an A1 amendment.
Okay. Senator Rosen moves the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will, Mr. Chair,
we'll have the amendment. We'll have the amendment shortly, but okay. I hold silver, and away we go here.
Mr. Chair, members, especially Senator Scoy, will gallop right through this. I've got a handout. Members, this has been a bill that we've been working on for several years. Horses currently are not defined as ag in Minnesota statute. I don't have to tell the Ag Committee how important horses are to the economy, but there's a 2004 information put out by the Department of Ag that direct economic impact of horses in the state is $553 million, and total economic impact is estimated about almost $1 billion, $930 million. As well, and this will, if we've just got a quick packet, there's a January 15th, 2010 letter put out by the Department of Ag. There was a task force that discussed horses. There's concern, of course. We're not interested in classifying if someone's got a horse in their backyard. We're not looking, that's not considered agriculture. But the task force put together, and there was a recommendation, you'll notice in the final paragraph, that the Minnesota Department of Ag believes that a definition making it clear that horses are livestock is needed in statute. As well in this packet, from a June 15th work from the Minnesota Department of Revenue guidelines for classifying property used for horse breeding. This amendment, and I don't know if you have it in front of you yet.
Not yet.
We'll make it clear. This is not about property tax classification. It is about purely defining horses as livestock. With me is Mr. Dayon, who's been working on this. He's got a horse farm in St. Michael. And then also, I don't know if the assessors are here and want to weigh in. There's always been sort of this discussion going back and forth, Mr. Chair, but I think we have peace in the valley. Hope that Senator Scoy won't bridle at the amendment.
What an ornery guy.
Gallop right along.
Okay, members, we have the amendment being passed out now.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Rosen has the A1 amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
You still want to offer it now? You see it?
Sure.
Okay.
But Senator Benson wants to know if this is a nay vote.
I was thinking about that. I don't know what we'll do. We'll have to see how we do.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if it's a nay vote, but it is coming down the home stretch now.
We need to stop being saddled with the silliness.
It's a lot of horsing around. If we could just focus.
All right. Senator Koch, would you describe your amendment again?
All right. Members, the first part of the amendment deals with the determination for property classification. You'll see that it clearly says it is not determinative for classification of property, and I'm sure Mr. Vanasa can speak about that. Mr. Dayon, do you want to just cover the definition is the subdivision 2?
All right. The breakdown on this now is that we've removed the language referring to intensive agricultural use at the request of the assessors and the Department of Revenue. And in response to that, they are removing Section 3, the repealer.
Mr. Vanasik.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Rob Nosek. I'm on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And over the last four years and a good half dozen hearings on this issue with this amendment, members, the assessors, the Department of Revenue, Farm Bureau, Farm Union, we're all on board and hope you adopt the amendment and move the bill.
All righty. Any questions? Anyone from the audience care to testify? If not, Senator Nelson renews her motion. We better vote on the amendment. I'm sorry. We didn't. Yeah, let's vote on the amendment. Senator Rosen has the amendment, the A1 amendment to the bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion that carries. Now, Senator Nelson renews her motion that Senate File 396 be sent to, as amended, be sent, be recommended to pass and sent to the general orders.
Sent to the general orders, yeah.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those nay. All right, the motion carries.
Yeehaw, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very high, old servant.
I'd like to thank all the members of the committee, and I appreciate the opportunity to educate you about the horse industry over the last 4 years.
Thank you, fun.
Mr. Dayon. Good luck to you.
Good luck to you.
We've got a couple minutes left. You know, we have Senate File 2339. In front of us, maybe we'll have Mr. Clavin come up and talk. We have the department here, too. Really, this is an extension of the day we had the Pollution Control Agency in, and we've had others talk about permitting and feedlots and all this sort of thing. So I will place Senate File 2339 before the committee. Mr. Clavin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Bruce Clayton, I represent the Minnesota Turkey Growers Association, the Broiler and Egg Association, Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association on this. I don't see my partner in crime here in the room, Mr. Schoenfeld, but if he comes in, I think he'll join me. Meantime, we'll just explain this really quickly. We view this as a very short bill. I do hope it goes as quick as the last one. What we have here is a follow-up from last year. And we sat in front of this committee and talked about feedlot permitting last year. I don't think anybody wanted to run this up again this year, but we brought a bill before you for a reason. For the past 14 years, and we talked about this last year, the MPDS permit was based on size. If you were over 1,000, you had to get an NPDS, a Federal Clean Water Act discharge permit, in order to run a few cattle out there. It was size-based. Last year, it was changed to follow the federal law, and the federal law is not size-based. It's discharge-based. If you discharge, you get the permit. If you don't discharge, you don't. The PCA has a rule in Chapter 7020 that says if you're over 1,000 and you're not getting an MPDS, then you have to get something called an SDS. And the SDS is the state version of the national permit. It doesn't allow you to discharge anything because you can only do that under the Federal Clean Water Act. So it's the state version. The problem is there is no SDS. They haven't developed it yet. So after the effective date last special session last summer, they're in the rulemaking process of trying to develop this SDS to fill this gap group that's over 1,000 but that's not getting an MPDS. They told us in our meeting yesterday they could write an individual SDS. What they're trying to do is develop a general one. So they're in the rulemaking process. On December 19th, a few months after the special session, the agency issued a notice of proposed rulemaking to tell the public that they're thinking of doing this, but there's not a draft yet. So what we have here is our effort at writing the SDS permit. That's really all this is. We've conceded that we would simply get a permit over 1,000. We don't understand the sense of the size-based anymore, but the agency has told us that they do want to have the ability to yank permits. I know Senator Stumpf up in your area, they always use Excel area as the example. So we've conceded that. If you need a permit to yank if someone's not behaving, we'll have a permit over 1,000. This is our effort at doing that. Our concept here is to be simple. I do have the, this is the 67-page MPDS/SDS that was renewed. There's some strikeouts in here, so I don't think it's exactly 67 pages, but we were trying to simplify this effort and go down to what we have here. The reason it's here today in deadline week on Tuesday is we have waited for this draft to come out. And we've waited all session. Every Monday I check the state register, no draft. So a week or so ago I consulted the chairman. I said, what do you think we should do about this? We're window shutting on the session. And we went ahead and put a bill together that would attempt to permit facilities that are over 1,000 but not getting an MPDS. And so that's why the bill is here. And talking to the agency, there's some things that they were looking at in the rules, like air emissions plans, emergency response. That's not in here. Certainly we're open to visiting about that. Maybe those should be included. The bottom line for us is we have to always follow the rules. Nothing in terms of zoning, EAWs, operation changes at all. This is the industry coming forward with a permit proposal. There's one final school of thought. We could have come in here and repealed the rule or proposed to repeal the rule. In other words, get rid of the SDS altogether so that the rule is you either get an MPDS or you don't. But we didn't propose that. We're actually proposing to be permitted, and this is our proposal.
All right. Any questions of Mr. Clavin? Yes, Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Clavin, so if you're not discharging, what are you actually permitting?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator Skoy, from what we understand, it's permitting you to operate. We proposed last year to call this a general operating permit, but then they would have had to do a construction short form, and there was some confusion over that. In fact, if you look at the rider language from last year's special session bill here, they got $350,000 a year for the next 2 years to develop, and I'm quoting, general operating permits. But we're kind of stuck in alphabet soup here because the SDS is in the rules, and so we've conceded, let's just call it an SDS then, but here's what the SDS will be. And it's essentially an operating permit. That's what we've tried to do here.
Okay. Further questions? Mr. Kadelka's here from the department. Senator Keelash, did you have a question? Or do you wait to wait for the...
I can wait till he's done.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Kadelka. Thanks for attending the committee meeting today.
Not a problem. Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm the Legislative Director with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And thank you for the time to let us comment on the bill. I do have a handout, if it's possible, to share with folks with some of our thoughts, and I'll try to be brief here. As Mr. Clavin mentioned, last year we did decouple the federal NPDS and the state SDS permit. And so the process that we're going through right now, as mentioned, is through the rulemaking process, we are making those changes so the rules now match the statute. Previously, the NPDS and SDS permit, the state and federal, had to be together. So we're going through that rulemaking process. And as Mr. Clavin mentioned, we're in the beginning process of that, that longer task. In the same time, we are making a general permit. The SDS permit will be specifically what is in 7020 rules right now. What we're doing is going through that joint federal-state permit and pulling out the federal parts. Though both of those tasks do take a while. The last time we did a general permit, it took over a year also to put it together. These are not simple permits to put together. The idea is you could go in and get an individual permit today. Proposer could come before the agency and ask for one. We would start one from scratch and build it specific to their requirements. The general permit, which we do in all areas, more than just feedlots, is if we have facilities are very similar, for instance, feedlots or a wastewater treatment facility, we create a general permit if they're about five or more, where we can save time by creating a cookie-cutter permit. If you meet X conditions, you get the permit. It helps speed up the process, and that's the process that we're in right now. We do have a number of concerns with the way the bill is written. Some of them are technical concerns that do take away public health and environmental protections. Under this bill, it specifically states what is in the application of the permit. Our 7020 rule, specifically 7020.0505, states a number of other items in there. State law always trumping state rule, we're not sure, and this is something we're still looking into, if that repeals those other items. And those include emergency preparation plans, air emission plans, and a few other items. If the goal is to have what is in the rules, all the stuff to be taken care of and followed, that's what we're creating already. That's the legislation that the legislature and the governor signed in law last year to do, is create a rule, or excuse me, a permit based on the 7020 rules. The other part, the other change this bill does is create a registration permit with just some basic information on the facility versus our permits that we currently put together. And there's a number of benefits we gain with the current process. It increases compliance in a productive manner that focuses on assistance and pollution prevention instead of enforcement and investigation. Upfront demonstration of compliance increases the compliance rate. Showing a plan for that you have an emergency management plan when you get your permit increases the amount of those that are being done. If it's later in the fact that you're just doing that, us going and investigating later, there's usually a lower compliance rate. Some just never end up being made. Also, the permit outlines specific parts that of the 7020 rules, which is a much larger book than the permit that feedlot operators need to do. It simplifies it so that they don't have to be an expert on the whole 7020 rules, which is much more complex. It's used as a tool to be beneficial to the operators. Again, there's some questions then about the registration permit versus the permit for over 1,000 animal units versus a registration that's used on smaller facilities. And we believe that over that threshold of 1,000 animal units, which was a negotiated settlement to bring an end to the feedlot wars between producers, ag, public interest groups, environmental groups, and various state agencies, that there's a larger potential for significant negative public health and environmental impacts if there is a discharge that's not handled correctly. There was a little discussion that feedlots don't discharge, so why do they need a permit? A number of environmental permit systems that the feds and the state have exist beyond just discharges. For instance, a landfill has a permit. A landfill is not allowed to discharge to the groundwater and other areas. It is a way to protect against those possible negative impacts if there is a discharge. those conditions are put on there in a preventive measure. The same goes with above and below ground storage tanks, which control large amounts of fuel and other chemicals. Those are some of the examples where it's in a similar situation while there's still permits, even though something doesn't discharge because of the concern. Our other concern is how this changes our relationship to producers. Currently, our ability to ensure compliance is upfront through the permit process. This will put into a situation where it's going to be more enforcement activities and inspections to determine if they have the correct plans, if they have been updated, if they're on file. And the concern is we know folks, even if we send a letter of warning after finding out a plan is not there or notice of violation where they have to correct it after a certain amount of time with no penalties, these things also upset producers. This is not a relationship we'd prefer to be on. We'd prefer to be on the proactive front end of the situation versus on the back end. We also have questions on how this affects the relationship with the public. Permit requirements and the Minnesota Rule 7020 was a settlement to end the feedlot wars as part of that larger group discussion between producer groups, ag, environmental, and other public stakeholders. And we have some concern built on top of passage of stuff last year that this could erode the public confidence, increase complaints that the agency has to respond to an investigative role, and create a distrust in the system when currently, I think, after the end of the feedlot wars, the agreement that was put into place has created confidence in the system, which is a good thing. The same, we have questions of how would local units of government act. Currently, we already hear from numerous times from producers of different rules in different parts of the state because of things local governments add. If the state requirements are pulled back, will we have even more and varied ordinances across the state, which would be even harder for folks to comply with? And finally, the relationship to EPA. Currently, EPA has a very limited involvement in the state. We have a strong program. We have numerous cases in Iowa and Illinois where that's not the case. EA comes in. While penalties issued by the state are seen as high sometimes, what it's compared to EPA is much larger. And the EPA actually sent out a news release just recently, an example of a fine for $1.5 million and a six-month prison sentence for an operator that had a discharge in North Carolina. This type of situation is being held up by EPA and the Department of Justice as a warning to other producers. This is the type of issues where we have been successful as a state because of the rules we have in place and the system we have in place to keep EPA out in such situations, because they feel that the state can handle the enforcement of the federal and state regulations.
Okay, Senator Stump?
Mr. Chairman, do you have any idea how long it's going to take to do the rules?
Mr. Kadelka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we are still on our timetable for finishing the rules in October. At this point, we had some meetings with the affected parties late fall, early winter, explaining our timetable, laid out how long this would take. We are also at the same time simultaneously working on putting together the permit so that as soon as we can get the rules in the place, we can put a permit out also. I do have an expert here with me from our agency that can elaborate a little bit further on the updates of the rulemaking process and the permitting process if you'd like.
So by October, we can expect the rules to be done?
Mr. Kadoka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that is our goal and our timetable.
Senator Kielash?
Mr. Chair, I noticed that this says the state shall issue a permit, and it lists all the things that need to be on the application, but not the compliance, any kinds of compliance requirements for whatever. And I'm kind of, it's like, as long as you apply and include all this stuff, you can get it, whether or not your plan meets any kind of criteria is what I'm getting out of the way this is written. Am I correct, Mr.
Clavin?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We always wade into these weeds a little bit. This is my driver's license. This is my permission, my permit to drive a car. I have to follow the rules when I do that. we still have to follow the rules. This is a permit proposal. And so we always have to follow the 70-20 rules, manure management plans, setbacks, and all the stuff that's in there. There's some air emissions requirement. We talked about that yesterday. We have to follow all that. None of this exempts it. What we're trying to do is say, here's the permit. Fill out the permit and start farming. That's all this effort is. But you still have to follow the rules of the road.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Clevin, then, so...
Senator Kulesh.
What you're saying is once you fill out the permit, the state shall give you that permit, and whether or not you follow the rules is up to the state to catch you at?
Mr. Chairman,
if you don't,
Mr. Clevin.
We have that in terms of the... If you flip back on 1.8, MPDS must issue according to federal law. There hasn't been in this area maize that I remember. Mr. Knopf may have a better memory than I do. But if you meet the terms of the permit, they issue it. Now, you have to go through township zoning and county zoning and conditional use permits and EAWs before you even get there. Then you get the permit. There's no way you're going to get a permit without doing an EAW over 1,000. So you've already done all this work to get it. This is the permit. This is the driver's license.
So, Mr. Chair, so you're saying that this does not exclude any of that. It is only the information that you need for the last bit of information after all the other work has been done.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's our intent, yeah.
I really don't see that in the way the language is written as to what's included in the, you know, it doesn't say in here that you need to have your EIS or any of the other permits in the application process so that the department could say, yes, this works or it doesn't, or follow-up. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kulesh, there's other sections of statute that aren't referenced here that require you to do the EAW, for example.
Okay, I think for now we're out of time, members, and so we'll lay Senate File 2339 on the table. I appreciate very much everyone's participation today and all your efforts to for the good of agriculture and for the good of Minnesota. We will adjourn the Committee on Agriculture and Rural Economies for today. Thank you very much.